What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Trending Thoughts Podcast. I enjoyed it last week having my brother Adam Jones on here, and I'm looking forward to this one because I have my big brother in the building. He's a 14-year NFL vet, former NFL Rookie of the Year, played with the Arizona Cardinals, and also won a Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens. He's a Walter Payton Man of the Year Award winner, which goes to the top community player in the league, which is a big deal. It's something that I wish I had the opportunity to win, because honestly, I think that means a lot more than any other award in the league, because it shows your commitment beyond the game. And he's also one of the founders of the Players Coalition. Y'all welcome my brother Anquan Bolden to the show. What's going on, Q?
Man, I'm chilling. What's good, man?
Hey, Doug, man. Just chilling, man. Trying to figure out how to handle this COVID-19, and we're opening up a little bit in Maryland. I know you're down there in Florida, and Florida doesn't care about anything, so it's just a normal day in the life of y'all down there. So I know y'all are chilling in the sun, just relaxing.
Yeah, man, we down here in paradise chilling, so.
Well, I hope y'all are staying safe, which I know y'all are. But, you know, you were a major influence on my career, really both on and off the field. I know I watched you and your family, and the way you were with your kids, your wife, you know, as a role model there, but also off the field, the way that you were in the community. And on the field, really, you know, as a pro, I can't skip past that. Like, watching your discipline, watching your routine, watching the way you practice, like the way you play. You know, it's just something I was able to learn a lot from just by watching, and also helping myself balance life issues and money and family and the whole nine, you know, conversations that we've had in the past. So, you know, I love and appreciate you to death for that. But, you know, you've helped me grow as a pro. And now you are obviously retired. But now I'm on this side of the retired life now. And I'm going to have to lean on you for this, too, because it's weird, man. I'm not going to lie. You played almost twice as long as I did, you know, with your 14 years. I finished up at 8 with a bum knee. And how's your transition into this next phase of life been going?
Man, it's definitely been an adjustment. I can say, though, for me, I think it has gone a little smoother than some, because I think while I was in still playing, I think I started to kind of move in a direction where, you know, I knew this game wasn't going to last forever. And I kind of started to do some things that I knew I would be involved in, you know, once my career was all said and done. I think the problem a lot of athletes have is, for their entire lives, they dedicate themselves to that specific sport. And that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. And at some point, it comes to an abrupt halt. And most times it comes not at the call of the athlete. You know, it's usually the organization saying, okay, you're not good enough anymore. And the athlete doesn't make that decision when they want to stop. So when something like that happens, guys struggle, especially if they don't have anything else going on besides that sport. They really struggle to find themselves. They really struggle to find out how they fit into society, because they've only known one thing for their entire lives. So it's just like somebody dedicating their lives to a certain career. And then at a certain point, somebody tells them, okay, you can no longer be involved in this career no more. Go find a different career and start all the way over. That's kind of how athletes are, you know, kicked to the curb, you know, once their skills diminish, or, you know, once the organization feel like, you know, they can't benefit from their services any longer.
I remember seeing you on the field in Philly and in the preseason game when you were in Buffalo. And I remember you talking about it a little bit, but it wasn't something that I saw coming. And then I see you announce your retirement like a week or two later. Like, what went into that decision?
Yeah, for me, man, I have been contemplating, you know, stepping away from the game, for, you know, a couple months prior to that. You know, I wasn't even sure I was going to sign with the Bills at that point. Because I think as an athlete, one thing you get so used to is routine. And those routines, not just daily routines, but you get used to seasonal routines. So like a certain time of year, you know your body is supposed to do X, Y, Z. You know, in the off season, you're supposed to be doing certain things. And then when it gets around the end of July, you know what I'm saying, the beginning of August, your body says you should be in training camp because you've trained yourself your entire life. And that's what you're familiar with. So for me, it was a struggle. I mean, I can't say it was easy to walk away, but I just felt a larger pull, you know what I'm saying, for something greater than football. And don't get me wrong, you know, I love the game of football. I love what the game of football has afforded me and my family. The platform. I mean, you name it. The game of football has done wonders for me, allowed me to meet people, you know, that I would have never come in contact with, so on and so forth. I mean, I've been able to live out a childhood dream. But I think at the end of the day, football is just that, a game. And I think we all are put on this earth for much more than football. Like I always say, man, if God put me on this earth just to play football, then I got cheated. Because at some point, football stops. And when football does stop, you're still a young man. So you can't convince me that God put me on this earth just to play football. So that means my life is pretty much done at the age of, what, 35 or something like that? If you're lucky enough to make it that far. Yeah. I mean, the average lifespan in the NFL is three and a half years. So if God put us here on this earth just to play football, then we got the short end of the stick. So I feel like, you know, although football is great, there's a lot of things that we can be involved in that is way more impactful than just, you know, scoring touchdowns or making tackles.
Man, I agree with that 100%. And I think that's kind of how I really carried out my career as well. You know, because football has an expiration date. If you play sports, it has an ending date. You know, it's not a matter of if, but when is it going to happen. And for me, I didn't anticipate it being so sudden. You know, I was pretty healthy, and all of a sudden, I'm dealing with some cartilage damage in my knee. But I knew that there was much more to life than just playing ball. So I didn't have to continue to try to take medicine and tear my body down, knowing that I want to grow old and be able to have fun with my kids and run around and play with them. And football has been the biggest blessing in my life. But at the same time, I knew before I even stepped into the NFL that it had an end date. You know, it could have ended in college. It could have ended in high school. Like, it's going to end. And I've always worked towards a bigger purpose. And just like you, you know, having this time now, you're starting to see, you know, the impact that you can make, you know, with the time that you have away from the game. I mean, there's been so much time. You know, you think about it, you talk about an off season and being ready. Like, we're used to, well, me especially, I'm used to being in a facility around this time of the year, you know, gearing up towards being in the best shape, you know, headed into camp in a couple of months. And, you know, now I'm working towards trying to build our fund the best way possible, trying to figure out how we can help people coming out of COVID-19. And I know you're doing some amazing things down there right now, literally with testing and helping others in down in South Florida get the resources that other people didn't really even think about bringing to them. So can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, man, I think, you know, dealing with this COVID situation, man, I think it just magnifies some stuff that, you know, we were dealing with as a country. Mm-hmm. When you look at like minority communities, how drastic we're being affected by COVID and the lack of resources that are available to minority communities, you know, which is one of the reasons why we as a Players Coalition and also my personal foundation, why we felt a need to help. We look at the makeup of different regions and different states and different cities, and then you see how much more the African American community is affected, even after making up a small percentage of those populations. And man, it gets you to thinking like, man, what are we doing wrong? Having access to food, having access to testing, having access to personal protective equipment. I mean, all of this stuff was just glaring. So, you know, for me personally, man, it was me wanting to help those that were in need. I mean, you're talking about, in a lot of situations, life or death. You know, people being able to eat, people being able to pay basic bills, like keeping their water on. And, you know, we talk about social distancing. To be honest with you, that's not it's not reality for a lot of people. I mean, you have people living in the projects, living on top of each other. I mean, social distancing can't happen. We're talking about, you know, we have commercials where we tell people to wash their hands for 20 seconds. But what if I don't have running water in my house? Or we tell them, we're setting up sites for people to get tested, drive up sites. What if I don't have a vehicle to get there? I don't have transportation to get there. Or, like what I've seen in minority communities, they don't test you unless you show symptoms. But you're telling me, you know, oh, there's only 9 people affected, when I personally know for myself entire households that are affected. So for my foundation, you know, I partner with a couple of organizations. And because of those things, we started bringing testing right to the neighborhoods where they're most needed. Like I told you, I've seen a county set up testing sites, and they test with all of the resources that they have. They were testing 8 people a day. And then we come in and we set something up in the neighborhoods that need them, and we test over 170 people in one day. We go to 5 different neighborhoods and we test over 1,000 people in 5 days.
It's crazy,
and the county,
man,
is only testing 8 people per day. Like, something is wrong there. But I think it's on us too, you know what I'm saying? Like, as athletes, that people that have platforms, people that have access to different things, it's our duty to make sure that we put those resources in the hands where they're most needed.
And that's why you are a legend, man. A lot of people, you know, it doesn't matter to them, and it's real and it's sincere. And you've been that way long before, you know, it really became, I don't want to say a trend, but before people realized that, hey, you have a responsibility to do more. Like, your voice matters. You have a platform. And you have been doing that since day one and long before I knew you, which says a lot about you, you know, and your family that's all in, Dion and everyone else, you know, that's all in on it. But I want to bring it back to ball for a second. You know, obviously we were a part of a special group together in Baltimore when they brought that Super Bowl back to the city, and Jacoby Jones in our room and all the fun that we had. You say Jacoby's name, you can't do nothing but laugh, man. We had a great time. Great time. Some big time plays were made by our group, man. And, you know, we'll ride together for history in Baltimore, which is something that, you know, I definitely don't take for granted. But I wanted to give the opportunity for you to tell the story that a lot of people don't know. You only know if you come to the Q81 golf tournament. And I happen to walk up, and it's a laughing moment there. Or if you're just kicking it around us at some social event, you would never know this story. But I want to give you the opportunity to tell everyone. Now, y'all, I don't pay attention a lot. I think I have attention issues. Matter of fact, I know I have attention issues. It's not even a fake. I know it. Diagnose it all. But this story right here... This is one of them that really takes the icing on the cake. And when I see my son, TJ, do some of the things that he does, I go back to this moment and I'm like, I can't even yell at the kid because I'm very capable. And I know I probably did the exact same thing he did. So go ahead, man. Here's your chance. Let me get it out there. And I'm just going to take the bullet.
Man, look, bro. I don't know.
Man, we
were.
I'll start it off, y'all. We were in Seattle, and it was raining. It was like off and on rain. And I had my helmet on a lot because, you know, it was raining. You want to protect it, and you can go ahead, Anquan. Take it over.
So, like he said, we're in Seattle, and it seems like it's always at least drizzling when you play in Seattle. So, you know, some guys, you know, keep their helmets on or whatever it is. Some guys got them off, whatever it is. And I think if defense gets a big stop and, you know, punt team is about to go out.
No, the kick, they just scored. It was a kickoff return.
Okay, it's a kickoff return.
Kickoff return. So, and I don't return. I haven't returned a kick all year.
So we get ready to go get on the field, and I'm sitting down on the bench, And the only thing I see is you just run over there, like, in a panic. And I'm like, you just throwing stuff, like, turning over helmets. I'm like, man, what's wrong with this dude? So I'm like, bruh, what are you looking for? So you like, man, I need my helmet. And when you said that, bro, I just looked at you like, you got to be kidding me, bro. And when you saw my face, you just put your hands on your head and was like, I got it on, don't I?
Man.
I was like, bro, you got to be the worst space cadet, dog.
Yo, we were... So, I'm over here in tears right now. Because that story, man, y'all, I was the backup kickoff returner. So David Reed ended up turning it over a couple of times. And yeah. All of a sudden, I hear Harbaugh and everybody yelling, Tory, Tory. And I just panicked. Like, you're back there. I'm like, what? So I went and I'm panicking trying to find my helmet, y'all. And thing was right on my head, man. And that was one of the most embarrassing things that have ever happened to me. But your face, I still remember that face. You looked at me like I was the dumbest dude walking on this earth, man.
Bro, I couldn't even say nothing to you, though. Like, I just looked like...
It's on your head. Like, what are you doing? Oh, man. So I had Attaboy here last week, man. And, you know, Adam did a lot in Baltimore, and we were there as well. On the baseball side, on and off the field, and we talked about the responsibility of athletes and being a role model, all those things that you're the perfect example of. And I wanted to ask, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, you're from Pahokee down in Florida, a little small town, and a lot of poverty, you know, a lot of struggle, but a lot of the most talented athletes in this country, especially football players, come from that area. But why are you so involved in the community?
Man, because I know what it feels like to go without. Man, like you said, I come from a very impoverished area where it's over 50% lives below poverty. We have this saying where I'm from, like growing up, we were poor, but we didn't know we were poor because everybody else around us was poor. So like, you don't really know any different. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know what I'm saying? My parents and my grandparents, they set, you know, a great example for me. Even in their lack, they still provided for others. Although we didn't have a lot, man, my mom and my grandma, you know, my father, all of them, they always had their doors open. Like if somebody needed to eat, you was always welcome to our house. You was always welcome, you know what I'm saying, to stay the night if you needed a place to stay. Like I've always seen my family, man, open the doors, even though they didn't have enough themselves. They still made themselves available to other people. They still made what they had available to others. And I guess for me, I've seen that model for me throughout my life, which is why I've been able to help others as much as I have.
Yeah, I like to say all the time, it takes a village to raise a child. And what you described is just, you know, the families coming together and being that village. You know, it becomes almost a lifestyle at times of like, man, like, I don't have now, but I know I can lean on someone else. Or it's like sometimes you get caught up in a tough financial circle of robbing Peter to pay Paul just to keep afloat, but everyone has each other's back. And that's something that, you know I can relate to as well with my mom and my grandma, you know, being that for us. And I know you really took it a step, you know, further. You know, you've been working, like I said, long before I made it to the NFL, you were involved in the community. You were in the trenches, wherever you were. And then Cap took a knee, and as a way to mobilize guys, you know, you along with Malcolm Jenkins decided to start the Players Coalition, which I'm a part of as one of the players. And really, I think it's over 100 other guys now. But what made you go and make that decision to start this group and to try to create an impact in another way?
Well, to be honest with you, for me, it started a year prior to Cap taking a knee. I had unfortunately, I lost my cousin. My cousin was killed by a plainclothes police officer. Mm-hmm. My cousin was in a band. He was a drummer in a band, and he used to play gigs, you know what I'm saying, all the time. And he was at this one gig one night, and on his way home, he broke down on the side of the road. And long story short, while he was on the phone with roadside assistance, this cop killed my cousin. And for me, man, like, I you know, obviously you see the stories on the news of all the unarmed black men being killed. And I can remember clear as day, I was in San Francisco, and we were actually playing the Ravens. And for me, you know, I remember that because obviously being traded from the Ravens to San Francisco, you know, anytime something like that happens, you know, you just want to, it's a big game. No matter what anybody else says, it's a big game for you. So for me, that was a big game. It's a game I was looking forward to. So we ended up winning that game.
I was there right with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was a big game for us because we had been traded from Baltimore over to San Francisco. So, you know, that game happened. And I remember after the game, I had an appearance, like right after the game. It's a family had won a contest, and I was supposed to go meet with the family right after the game or whatever. And then after that, you know, me and my family, we usually go to dinner or whatever, you know what I'm saying, after the game. We go out and eat or whatever. So I get dressed. Like, we win the game. We're going to the locker room. I shower or whatever, and I'm getting dressed. And only thing that's on my mind is I have to – you kind of got to switch gears because you're about to go meet this family or whatever. So I'm trying to switch gears now. And then I walk out to greet my family. And the first thing my wife asked me is, where's your phone? I was like, it's right here. She's like, let me see your phone right quick. So I gave her my phone. I wasn't really thinking about it. You know what I'm saying? I just gave her my phone. And I was like, you know, we got to do this appearance or whatever. She was like, okay, go ahead. You know, we'll be right here. So I go in, you know what I'm saying? I do the appearance, and then I come back out. It was only like 15 minutes or whatever. And then I come back out, and then we go to the restaurant that we're going to, and we're eating or whatever. And she has this look on her face. And I'm like, you okay? She's like, yeah. She was just like, we need to talk when we get home. And I'm like, all right. I was like, you sure you okay? She was like, yeah, I'm fine. So we eat and we go home, and, you know, we get the boys showered or whatever. And then me and her go into the room, and she's like, I got to tell you something. And I'm like, what's up? She was like, I don't know how to tell you this, but your cousin has been killed. I'm like, what? Who? So she was like, Corey. So I'm like, Corey, what Corey? Because I got a couple cousins named Corey. So she says, CJ brother, Corey Jones. I'm like, what? I'm like, nah. Like, you know, there's certain people in your family, bro. Like, if somebody be like, they had a run-in with law, you'll be like, okay, I can see that. But this was a person, he was probably the last person you would expect to have a run-in with law enforcement. So she's telling me, and I'm like, it's not making sense to me because the person she's talking about is nowhere in the world he would be killed by an officer. So she was like, that's why I asked for your phone, because I know people was probably blowing your phone up. And then she gives me my phone, and there's over 100 text messages on my phone. So I started to call family members to figure out what's going on. And then I get the story that he was on the phone with roadside assistance and the cop killed him. And for me, man, it was, I don't even know if you can describe the feeling that you go through when something like that happens. It's just a rush of emotions. Number one, you're confused. You're searching for answers. Then you get angry. Then you want revenge. I mean, there's so many emotions that you go through just in a matter of minutes. And for me, it was, this has to stop. Like, this cannot be life. And at that point, I'm living what all the parent, the families prior to us had gone through. And for me, I wanted to make sure, that, you know, even after my cousin, that other families don't have to go through it. And now we're sitting here talking about it, you know, with the Ahmaud Arbery case coming up, like, taking the nation by storm. Like, this is the stuff that, and this is the reason why I started the Players Coalition, so that we can, as professional athletes, use our voice to not only bring light to these situations, but to bring justice. Because I think for Fortunately for my family, the officer was convicted. But for a lot of families, not only do they not get justice, a lot of them don't even get their day in court.
It's crazy,
and I feel like, you know, one of the reasons why my cousin was able to get some type of justice was because I was able to keep it out and center when you're talking about putting public pressure on those who are in positions of authority to do the right thing. Because a lot of times, man, if you don't have people to speak up for you, people with a little bit of notoriety or people with a little bit of clout or whatever it is, they kind of sweep that stuff under the rug. And I think the thing that has to start happening with us in the African-American community, we have to have a strategy. And it can't be just go protest. Because we've seen how over and over again, one of us get killed by an officer and we get outraged, we protest, we bring light to that situation. And don't get me wrong, protests are needed. And I think every facet of it is needed. Protest is needed because it brings light to situations. But I also think we have to have, when we protest, we have to have a strategic plan about how we're going to see justice be served. And I think for some time, we as a black community have failed to do that.
I agree with that 100%. And, you know, the same way they say faith without works is dead, I feel like protesting without a plan and action is dead. You know, I feel like it's too many times people have been protesting about these issues forever, like long before we even got on this earth. You know, people were battling the same type of challenges and even worse back in the day. And to think about now what's going on, and I think it's a lot of great. There are a lot of great people out here doing amazing things. But I think it's consistent that we're all working and moving in the same direction, and you keep these issues to the forefront, but also you figure out ways to hold people accountable and don't settle for anything less, because that's what's been happening over the years, in my opinion. Something happens and people lose interest and it just dies off. And in your case, you see it, you know, it hits home. It's personal. And I wanted to talk to you about it on this show because really I wanted to talk about the talk, right? And I think about your cousin and the way you described him. And I see myself as a person who, you know, most people would be like, man, there's no way. If I do something stupid or you see me on the bottom line, you'd probably be shocked by it. Like, man, what was he doing? Like, there's no way, right? And I feel like you view your cousin the same way. And I just remember getting the conversation from my mother about how to engage and interact with police, but also how to engage and interact with people who may not like me because of my skin. And those are real conversations that you have to have as an African-American man and father that other people probably don't have to have. And I want to talk about that with you because I was getting DMs from people asking, like, are you serious about, you know, the context of talking to your son about Ahmaud? You know, I was like, man, how do I describe this to TJ? You know, this cat TJ can read, so I can't shelter him from everything. When you cut on the cable TV and it says in a message of the trending news, the guy can read it, right? he can ask about what's going on. And I thought it was, like a lot of people, you know, they were for sure. I remember seeing one message in particular of a guy that was more negative. He was like, no, you can tell him that there are bad people in this world and sometimes things happen and there are bad people. He was like, or you can tell him that this, that, and the third, and they can be afraid of everything. And I was listening and I felt like it was dismissive of the conversations that we have to have. And I wanted to ask you before I go into my personal experience with my mother in these conversations, like, what did your mother and father do to you or talk to you about when it came to engaging with police, black, white, blue, whoever, but also, you know, when it came to dealing with people who may not like you because of the color of your skin?
See, and that's the thing. I don't, it's not a conversation. It's a lifetime of teaching. And I think, like, if you don't, it's hard to explain to someone if they're not in the same boat. So we talk about having the conversation. Number one, in having the conversation, there's so many things that you have to talk about. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't think it's just one conversation. Like, there's a number of different situations that you have to talk about that is covered under the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a couple examples. Obviously, I have two boys. Our oldest is 15, AJ, and then Ashton is 9. So, and before I say this, I have to say that as a black parent, even if you don't want to have the conversation, you would be doing yourself and your child an injustice. And it's irresponsible if you don't have the conversation. And the reason I say that is because imagine you allowing your child to walk into a situation unprepared that you haven't prepared them for. And then they have no idea of how to handle that situation. So you have to, you even if you feel like, and I struggle with it as well, you know what I'm saying? Because you feel like in a certain way, you're taking your child's innocence away. But at the same time, you have to be responsible as a parent and make your child aware of whatever it is that they're going to walk into. That's your job as a parent, to prepare your child for this world. And when they leave you, that they're able to handle each and every situation that they come across. That's your job as a parent. So, like for me, some of the conversations that my parents had with me is different than some of the conversations that I have to have with AJ, because we grow up in different communities, different areas. So I'll give you some examples. Yeah, my parents talked to me about, you know, how to handle myself in public, you know, how to handle myself if I ever come in contact with the police or whatever. But just to add to that, those conversations, like with AJ, I have to have conversations with him about even when he's hanging out with his friends. I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. My son is in a situation where he's around all types of people. He's around white, black, Hispanic, Asian, you name it, he's around. He goes to school, he has friends, you know what I'm saying? Where I grew up at, 99.9% of Pahokee is, you know, was black. Like, really the only, you know what I'm saying, white people that we really came in contact with were, you know what I'm saying, teachers and whatever. He's dealing with that on a daily basis. So I'll give you an example. So I remember one Halloween, AJ wanted to go trick-or-treating with his friends, right? And this particular Halloween, he was the Scream character. So, you know, they have the mask, mm-hmm. and then they have, like, the little knife or whatever, right? So he came to me and Dion, and he was like, Mom, Dad, I want to go trick-or-treating with my friends. Is that okay? And we were like, yeah, that's cool. And then my wife says, but you have to leave the knife home.
Mm.
And the look to him, he was like, well, why do I have to leave my... He didn't say it, but the look was, why do I have to leave a part of my costume home? And then we had to break it down to him. Son, you and your friends are not looked at the same. We had to let him know, you know what I'm saying, that he was viewed differently than his friends. There's certain things that your friends can do that you can't. When you go to the movies with your friends, there are certain things that they can do that you can't. You will be looked at a certain way that they won't be looked at. Even down to your appearance, how your hair is. As black people, you have to be conscious of pretty much everything you do, say, wear. All of that matters. You think about a particular guys with dreads, how they're viewed. You think about guys with gold teeth, how they're viewed. Like, even me saying those words paints a certain picture in your head.
It's crazy.
And as a black person, you have to be aware of every situation that you're in. It's not just, okay, when you get stopped by an officer, roll down all your windows, have both hands on the steering wheel so that they are visible. No, it's not just that conversation. It's when you're walking in the mall and somebody clutches their purse, or you're walking in a certain neighborhood where people don't feel like you belong, and they might call the police based off of how your hair is. I remember growing up, we couldn't go in a certain store more than three of us at a time.
Oh. You've been followed around stores, I'm sure.
Most definitely. Man, I've gone in stores and people wouldn't even acknowledge us. I'm talking about you go in the store and people don't want to help you because they don't feel like you belong in the store. And I'm like, the nerve of you, I can buy the store and you work here and you treating me this way, all off a preconceived notion that you have in your head.
And bias is real, man. And it's something that everyone has some form of, it, right? But it impacts everyone differently. You know, when you go out and you're judging a person, because everything isn't just flat out racism, but a lot of it is folks' bias and things that they may have think they've heard or that they were even taught by their parents. You know, it comes out in a way it impacts other people, in a way it affects other people. You know, the advice, really what you just told your, you know, about your son and his school, I mean, that hits home to me because, you know, I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, but my town, you know, was mixed and I had the opportunity to deal with a lot of different people. But at the end of the day, when I went home, it was all the same. We were all in the same boat. And with him, where we live now, it's not that way. You know, I literally live in a county in Howard County, Maryland, where there was just a big deal about redistricting the school zones. You know, and a lot of the ugliness and racism and folks' bias, you know, came out. You know, and he's going to be going to school in this area. We live in an area where people really fought the hardest. And I'm not saying everyone that felt that way, a certain type of way about things switching, was racist. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is there was a lot of racial undertones like that existed. And there were also real life letters that I saw in my own two eyes that existed. So, you know, it was real. And you think about, you know, our role as a parent, which you, again, described perfectly, like, we are here to prepare our kids. I never want my child to be afraid of anything, but I want him to be able to handle it. I don't want him to be shocked or distraught when things happen to him. You know, like, it's, and I want to be like, man, I want to understand there are bad people out here. Like, you know, it happens, but you know how to handle it. You know, because I know when people hear me talk about it, they're like, man, what do you mean? You know, the person's, Ahmad stopped in the house, you know, that's why they called the cops on him, or so-and-so got in trouble, that's why they did. Well, how can you explain to me the same Torrey Smith that whose voice you hear right now, played in the NFL, graduated, has a master's degree, always made the honor roll, never been in trouble, I've had guns drawn on me three different times, so, by police officers. So it doesn't really matter, you know, where you're from, what you're capable of. If a person views you a certain way and as a threat, it doesn't matter what kind of title you have. In that moment, you're just a black man and you're viewed as a threat to that individual, which we have to continue to fight against. And I appreciate all the work that, you know, you're doing in that. And I know that my mother and my grandmother prepared me for that. You know, I know there are times where it is a very scary conversation for parents, but also I think it's, what's lost in this conversation is how it impacts people who may not have to deal with these conversations. Because, you know, I have a lot of friends who are white, and when they talk about this, they're like, well, you know, I don't have to have these conversations. So it makes them feel really like weird or uncomfortable, because they're like, well, I'm not like that. So, you know, I don't understand. Like, you know, I don't see color. Like we're all the same. Like, and what do you say to your friends, you know, who may be white or of a different race, who may not experience the exact same things or have these exact same conversations? What do you say to them to let them know that, you know, it's okay, like, to understand that these conversations had to happen, because honestly, it's just reality. What is your advice to those parents or those that may even be listening who are wondering, you know, how does this conversation impact me and my household, even though I don't have to have these conversations with my kids?
I would say this, like, one thing that I would encourage people to do is, man, just learn how to be sympathetic. Learn how to have compassion for people that are different than you are, right? So, like, I can give you an example. So there are certain conversations that mothers have to have with their daughters that they don't have to have with their sons. Mm-hmm. Because we are different, right? Mm-hmm. And I may not never be able to understand those conversations. But for me to dismiss them would be ignorant on my part. Like, as a little girl growing up, your body changing, you starting to come into your own, you having cycles, and this, a little boy, we don't have to have those conversations. Just because I don't have to have that conversation doesn't mean I can't be sympathetic to that. Doesn't mean I can't have compassion, you know what I'm saying, on women who have to have those conversations. So just because it doesn't affect you personally doesn't mean that it's not happening. And you don't have to get offended by it. You don't have to get weirded out by it. It happens. Not everything in life affects you per se, but that doesn't mean that they don't happen and they don't, those conversations don't need to be had.
And I don't think I could say that any better, man. You know, when you talk about these things, it's real. And oftentimes I feel like people just feel guilty about it. And I don't think you should feel guilty about the way that, you know, you are and the way you interact. You know, I think you should just be aware of it. You know, be aware of the things that are around, because I've been around and I've talked to friends who have felt uncomfortable by some of the conversations that I've had on Twitter or an interview or whatever. And then when I had the opportunity to actually sit down and talk with them, and I asked them, like, well, have you ever heard this type of comment, which is something that may have been racist or showed someone's bias? And they have. Right. So it's like you kind of can't have it both ways, because you're that way, which is great. I think it's like you should almost stand up and be a voice when you do see other things happening around, so that it helps with all of our accountability, really. You know, because it's, things aren't going to change just because black people are fighting for black people. Right. That's not going to get us the results that we want. We need everyone to understand everyone's issues. You know, like, the fact that we have to have these conversations is a problem in itself. In a perfect world, we would love to not have these conversations at all, right? Isn't that the ultimate goal? You know, right. That's the ultimate goal, is like for all of us to live in harmony and respect each other, love each other, and just continue on. Right. Just treat each other the same. You know, but we're having these conversations. So the fact that we are having it, like you said, showing empathy, showing sympathy, whatever it is for you, you know, is necessary. And I appreciate you, you know, Q, coming on here and dropping these gems. I'm for sure going to take a lot of them with me, especially when it comes, you know, to parenting my boys and my daughter. And I know you'll always be there to pick up the phone when it comes to that. But I appreciate you, man. Keep up the great work, and I'll keep fighting at the front with you.
No doubt, bro. I appreciate you having me on, though.
All right, bro. Be safe.
All right, fam.
Now it's time for Tory's Take, the part of the show where I give you my unfiltered opinion on what's going on and trending in my world. I want to say shout out to my brother Anquan Bolden for pulling up to the show. Great perspective as always, and that's a great man, a great leader right there. So make sure y'all follow him on all social media platforms and keep up with the great work that he is leading with the Players Coalition, which I'm a part of, like hundreds of other guys literally now. And just figuring out a way that we can make an impact. You know, one thing that I've learned, especially in when it comes to social justice and fighting for equality and everything else, really, there's no one right way to do it. Brian Davis, a great friend of mine, always says there's more than one way to skin a cat. And that's what I've come to believe, especially when it comes to this. You know, we live in a time and an era where everyone likes to pit people against each other and say, hey, I'm doing this right, you're doing this wrong, my way's the right way, I want the credit, this and the third. And honestly, it's gotten us nowhere. I've learned that even throughout history and reading more, that everyone's had their own strategies, everyone's had their own path. And really, none was ever greater than the other one. No matter how big or small, we all have a responsibility to do more. And to make sure that by simply doing the right thing, we are improving our environment, our culture, and our country at the end of the day. I want to encourage y'all to have more conversations with your friends about these issues and these challenges. They're uncomfortable. They're weird. They're awkward. But I like to encourage y'all to talk to someone, especially someone that may not have grown up the exact same way you do. You know, because believe it or not, all African-Americans or all black people don't feel the same way about these same issues, because they may not have had a situation hit home for them, or they may not have actually experienced anything. Like, that's very possible. But there are plenty of people who have, and you can't dismiss their feelings. I want to encourage you to seek and to learn more about other people and their situations, their life, how they grew up, how different situations impact them, and really why they feel a certain way. And I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be a therapist or push y'all in any direction, but I think these conversations are healthy, and it will help you with some of the questions that you may have, you know, just by going to someone that you love and care about as a friend. And again, don't dismiss people's feelings because you don't agree with their perspective. That's a big deal, because dismissing someone's feelings is a lot different than dismissing someone's opinion. You know, people crush me all the time on social media because of my opinion, and that's fine. But when you dismiss my feelings in the way that I feel about certain issues that I've experienced, that's where we have an issue. And I think that goes for everyone. And honestly, you can probably use that in a million and one other situations. But dismissing someone's feelings is different than dismissing someone's opinion. So make sure that you're doing more of the latter than dismissing someone's feelings, because that's when you have these heated debates. That's when you have people becoming really tone deaf. That's when you have people shunning out and becoming disinterested in what you have to say because they feel like you're dismissing their feelings. So let's make sure we're all being better for each other. Let's all make sure we're treating each other with respect. Let's be the example for our kids, for our future, for your kids and their future. Let's make sure we leave this world a better place than it was when we first came into it. Catch y'all next week. Peace.